Good evening. This is the KRFP Evening Report for Wednesday, September 3rd, 2014. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Capone trial begins in Moscow. Judge rules Tacoma suburb of Fife can prohibit marijuana businesses, and Moscow City Council approves temporary expanded sidewalk cafes and asks for affordable housing plan. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. All three daughters of Rachel Anderson testified in the first day of the murder trial of Charles A. Capone yesterday in Moscow, with one saying her mother lived in extreme fear as she faced more and more harassment as she moved to divorce Capone in the weeks and days before she disappeared. The oldest daughter, Amber Griswold, said her mother's demeanor changed from outgoing to sad, and her mode of dress changed. Anderson disappeared in April 2010 after visiting her estranged husband, Charles A. Capone, at his Moscow shop to pick up a vehicle of hers he was working on. Anderson's former co-worker, Angela Cabrera, said Anderson left work early the last day she saw her, saying she needed a restraining order and that Capone would kill her rather than go through the divorce. Cabrera testified she could tell Anderson was very upset when she was told someone saying he was Charles Capone had called the pathology lab where she worked inquiring about the hours that she worked there. Griswold called police when she found out her mother did not show up for work on April 19, 2010. Capone says Anderson left his shop at 7 p.m. on April 16th, which was the last anyone has heard of her. Capone's friend, David C. Stone, is expected to testify he saw Capone strangling Anderson and helped him dispose of the body by weighing it down with tire chains and throwing it off the Red Wolf Crossing Bridge at Clarkston. Stone had been charged with murder along with Capone, but has pleaded guilty to failing to notify law enforcement or the coroner of a death and hopes to have the murder charge dropped in exchange for his testimony, which is expected next week. One of Capone's defense attorneys, D. Ray Barker, said Stone's statements are inconsistent and don't make sense. Pocatello Police Lieutenant Paul Manning says an Idaho State University instructor was treated and released at Portneuf Medical Center after a concealed gun he was carrying discharged on campus, wounding him in the foot yesterday. Manning said the instructor had an enhanced concealed weapons permit and was allowed by law to carry the weapon. Neither Pocatello Police or Idaho State University would release the name of the instructor to the Associated Press. The incident occurred in the physical science complex. The instructor was teaching a chemistry lab which had 19 registered students, but it was unclear if any were in the room at the time of the gun discharge. ISU President Arthur Valis told the Idaho State Journal, "It's unfortunate. I'm sure the incident was scary and embarrassing." The University of Idaho suspended football game with the University of Florida that was canceled after one kickoff play in Gainesville, Florida, Saturday will not be finished, but Florida will pay Idaho the $975,000 guarantee stipulated in the game contract. The game was delayed for nearly 3 hours by lightning, and one play was held after 1.75 inches of rain fell on the field. Another lightning strike prompted officials to stop the game, and it was officially suspended 50 minutes later, citing dangerous field conditions. The two schools were working on rescheduling the game this season but could not agree on a date. The two teams did agree to a 2017 football contest. Pierce County Judge Ronald Culpepper has upheld the City of Fife's ban on cannabis businesses, saying Friday municipalities in Washington do have the right to ban cannabis businesses. Culpepper wrote in his ruling, a small community such as Fife with less than 10,000 people did not seem to be thwarting the will of the voters by banning cannabis shops, and noted there is recreational marijuana retail available nearby in Tacoma. Culpepper said he did not have to rule on the Tacoma suburb's argument that the Federal Controlled Substances Act takes precedence over the voter-approved Initiative 502. However, Culpepper wrote, there is not a federal preemption because the federal government could crack down on marijuana if it wanted to. He also called Fife officials' argument they could be prosecuted by the federal government for approving marijuana-related businesses far-fetched. The case began when Ted Weatherby, who received a cannabis retail license from the State Liquor Control Board for a location in Fife, sued to compel the city to allow him to start his business. Attorney Mark Nelson, representing Weatherby's company MMH, argued, among other things, that the prohibition on opening pot stores in Fife violates the voters' will. Nelson noted 53% of Fife residents voted in favor of Initiative 502. State Solicitor General Noah Purcell, who argued in the case on behalf of the Attorney General's office, defended Initiative 502 and said his office will go anywhere at any time to defend I-502 from federal preemption. Attorney General Bob Ferguson said the case will end up before the state Supreme Court eventually, but he believed Judge Culpepper's ruling put I-502 on stronger legal ground because of his comments on the federal preemption issue. Seattle-based American Civil Liberties attorney Allison Holcomb said Judge Culpepper's decision was specific to the case. Holcomb said, I don't think Judge Culpepper's decision necessarily applies to other jurisdictions or Pierce County, where legislation is pending right now. Providence Health and Services has announced Washington State University will change the bylaws of a new health center that will serve low-income people to be operated jointly by the two institutions, so the center will not have to forbid medical procedures that offend the moral values of Providence. The American Civil Liberties Union sent a letter to the WSU Regents last week pointing out wording in the health center bylaws which, quote, forbid or severely restrict many reproductive and end-of-life health services, including contraception, vasectomies, fertility treatments, tubal ligations, abortion, death with dignity, and advanced directives that are contrary to Catholic teachings, unquote. WSU and the Empire Health Foundation teamed up with Providence, a Catholic institution which owns 30 hospitals, to create the Spokane Teaching Health Center, which would operate as a nonprofit clinic and provide 6 medical, pharmacy, and nursing student residencies for WSU students. WSU hopes to expand the number of residencies at the clinic to 18. The Moscow City Council last night voted to direct staff to establish a reimbursement procedure to make $20,000 available to the Moscow Affordable Housing Trust for affordable housing initiatives. The initiatives would include support of pre-development costs, organizational infrastructure, and progress towards recognition as a community housing organization. Moscow Affordable Housing Trust President Carl Johnson outlined the need for the money at last night's city council meeting.
We've used about half of the $20,000 private donation to bring the organization up to capacity. That's what the federal standards look at, is what is an organization's capacity to be successful. And it's a rigorous examination to make sure that the federal money is well spent as well. And we're tentatively approved as a CHOTO, and that will give us funding in availability for operating assistance, but that funding probably won't be available until the first part of 2015. So right now we have enough funding to carry us through on our basic operations until that time. But we do not have fundings to go out and start developing a project, because that's going to require all of the things we mentioned, the engineering, the architecture, the consultants, all of these things to examine a project, line it up so that we can go to the federal funding organizations and say, here's our project, here's all of our documentation to show that it can be successful. That's going to cost some money to put that together. So that's the gap we really need to fill right now to make a project happen sooner rather than later, because the sustenance of the organization will be partly through development fees that we generate internally to make these projects happen. So we can't live on government money indefinitely. We have to start producing something in order to make that happen. I spoke of the capacity of the organization. One of the capacities they look at is not only your documentation and your professional capacity, but they also look at your fiscal capacity. So having cash on the books ready to go for this development is more valuable in that examination than would be a promissory note.
That was Moscow Affordable Housing Trust President Carl Johnson at last night's Moscow City Council meeting. Also at last night's meeting, the council voted to temporarily allow expanded sidewalk cafe seating downtown for a new event called the Vandal Town Block Party, scheduled for Friday, September 26th. The business owners wanting to expand their sidewalk cafes, where food and beverages would be served, would need permission from adjacent business owners because the expanded space would include the sidewalk areas in front of their neighbors. Mayor Bill Lambert pointed out part of the reason for expanding the sidewalk serving space was the large number of University of Idaho students and families expected downtown for the event during Dad's weekend. The band scheduled for the event to take place from 6 to 9 p.m. on September 26th are Simba and the Exceptional Africans and Voodoo City Radio. City Councilmember Walter Steed had a question about the promotion of the event, which includes the words alcohol-free. Here's Steed, followed by a reply from City Supervisor Gary Reedner.
I'm very much in favor of the block party. I've been a proponent of it when I've had an opportunity to weigh in with city staff or others. I thought it was a good idea to bring the college students into downtown Moscow and let them know that we are down here and we have businesses that are interested in your presence. I do have one question, though, about the proposal. I believe that we have, maybe promoted is too strong a word, but have advertised this as an alcohol-free event. We have not done anything to preclude alcohol. I'm not suggesting that we should, but is expanding the alcohol serving establishments space and therefore the number of persons they can handle and serve a little bit flying in the face of advertising it as a alcohol-free event? And that question is for whoever wishes.
Gary, you want to take that?
Take that.
Yeah, I certainly can respond to that. And that was a question that came to me later this afternoon. The idea is to create more cafe-type seating, put more people out on the street. It is just as plausible that people will eat outside because that area is expanded. The intent is not to create any additional regulations. The full alcohol regulations that are in place today are the ones that will be in place that evening. If people choose to drink, they will have to drink legally. The idea is to create more of an ambiance on the street, have more people outside eating, conversing, creating a more welcome space. So we have not promoted this as a – certainly alcohol is not central to this event. This event is about – having the students come downtown, meet the downtown businesses, hopefully get some specials, show them that downtown Moscow's there for them as well. We have not restricted anyone from doing what they do in their regular business.
That was Moscow City Supervisor Gary Reedner, preceded by City Councilmember Walter Steed at last night's Moscow City Council meeting. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather from the National Weather Service, there's a 20% chance of isolated showers before midnight tonight, otherwise mostly cloudy during the early evening, gradual clearing, and a low of 45. And then a string of clear days with sunny skies in the daytime, highs 74 tomorrow, 80 on Friday, 84 Saturday and Sunday, and 78 on Monday. Lows will be in the mid to upper 40s. Currently, light rain in the area, 59 degrees. Thanks for tuning in to the KRFP Evening Report. Coming up next is the weekly news magazine from Between the Lines, followed by Flashpoint, the daily investigative news magazine from Pacifica Radio. And that'll be followed by This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian news magazine at 7:30 p.m. World Waves, World Music with Catherine Bonzo on at 8 and at 9:30. Grateful Dead Through the Decades at 11 o'clock. Bob Slacktime Funhouse at 12 midnight. The Inner Side. And I'm Lee Robartis. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on Radio Free Moscow, be sure to buy a raffle ticket or more than one raffle ticket for the new Citizen 2 bike that we are giving away. Tickets are available at the Radio Free Moscow studios, at Moscow Farmers Market, and from Radio Free Moscow DJs. Have a good night. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman, community radio for the Palouse at 90.3 on your FM dial.